It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's a destination. We are finally here.
Let's go.
What is good, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Destination Dynasty. I am your gracious host, Scott Connor. You can find me on X at CharlesChillFFB. And I want to give a shout out to our community, to everybody that joined us over the last 4 days on the live stream for day one, day two, and day three of the NFL draft. I was unable to make it on the stream on day three, but the crew held it down. They went for almost 18 hours when you combine the 3 days. So an absolutely incredible turnout and incredible production by everybody at the DD team. Joined us on Destination Chill last night, another marathon of a show going over all of the skill players. And we're finally getting some closure on the draft season. It has been a long process since we ended the NFL season. The fantasy season was over. College football season ended, started at the Senior Bowl, and we're ending here with the end of the 2024 NFL draft. It's a great time. It's probably the most fun 3.5 months in the dynasty season because everything is hypothetical. Everything is, let's play strategy. Let's play what is going to happen if, or what is going to happen when. It's really, really fun time, but it comes to an end. Now it's time to jump into rookie draft season, starting to build teams, starting to really focus on roster construction. But just want to give one last round of applause to everybody at Destination Devi. Ray led the charge, was there the entire time. Absolute home run hitter, cleanup hitter. Couldn't ask for a better leader of this organization. And then everybody else, they contributed. All of the content creators contributed on stream, behind the scenes, on social media, running mock drafts in the Discord. And we're also able to pump out over 4 hours of bonus content in the Discord, extra podcasts from myself and some of the other creators that were able to go through and give some instant reactions outside of the live stream. So great job to everybody. Thank you. We're starting to transition into rookie draft season. So we're going to get in today with this show. It is going to be roster construction tiers. And here's what that's going to mean. I'm going to go through, not the ADP, but I'm just going to go through some of the players, not all of them. We did that on Destination Chill, literally touched on every single player. So if you haven't tuned that in from last night, check that out. But I'm just going to kind of go through the roster construction tiers. Everyone knows I'm famous for the roster construction series, being very adamant about constructing teams correctly. But going to talk a little bit about how I see this class and where it fits in. And you're going to see a lot of content this next week or two about rookie draft tiers. What's the ADP? Who to value where? Who to pick where? Heck, we're going to be a week from now, there's going to be thousands and thousands of drafts in the books where people are already going to be saying, yes, I've done 6 drafts. Here's what they look like. We're going to have live ADP from sites that are tracking it. So that's going to be here very quickly. This is going to be the initial look at my roster construction tiers for the rookie class. So it is not going to necessarily tell you who to tier over who. It's going to talk about tiers, but it's going to be more so what to look for based on your format of your league. Tight end premiums, how big. Go back and listen to the series if you need a reminder on how to analyze some of that stuff. DestinationDevi.com, the war tool. Use it on there. Plug in your league. Really get an idea of maybe not what to do, but more importantly, what not to do. What not to draft yourself into. All of these roster construction traps that we talk about all year. Don't make the same mistake just because we have a bunch of new information in front of us. So remember that. And I did want to put this caveat out there. I get a lot of questions about, can you stray from your roster construction? And that's something I'm going to talk about a little bit in this episode. Ray and I talked about it a lot last night on Destination Chill with ADV. There's going to be times, heck, most of the players outside of even the mid-second round in your rookie draft and beyond, it is purely, what is my plan for this player? What is the ADV? What is the sentiment score for these guys? Not what are they going to do, not what are they going to become, but is what can they become to me in a short period of time. We're not looking 3 years out. We're looking for probably 6 months or less. We're probably looking sometime in the off season, if not the beginning to middle of the season. I don't even want to hold players for an entire year with the plan that in 2025, they're going to be more sure. There's some analysis to be had with that type of asset, but I really want to limit how many of those I have on my team. If I immediately say, at their cost, and again, we're talking cost here, so we'll get into what I'm talking about with roster construction tiers, but at their cost, if one of the first things I think about with this player is, well, maybe in 2025, they'll have a great role. That's fine, but if that's all they have going for them, that's where I want to be cautious. I want to also be looking at other things that could happen between now and then, even if they really are a 2025 play. Can stuff happen in between that time where I'm going to have more movement, more flexibility? That is the definition of hitting on a draft pick. It's not a hit that receiver produced a top 24 season. That's not a hit. Because if I get a bunch of top 30 seasons, but never a top 24 season, there's probably going to be a window in there where somebody says, you know what, that guy can have a top 24 season. I'll give you a first round pick. And if I pick that player in the second round, that's not a miss. Even if they never have a top 24 season, the miss was I didn't sell during the window where I could have gotten more or when they were a live market asset. So just keep that in mind. It's not hits and misses. We're not drafting for one outcome. We're drafting for multiple outcomes. So I think that's really how you have to look through these tiers and these roster construction tiers specifically is what is the plan? Because people ask me all the time, can I stray from my optimal roster construction? Scott, I've determined that it's not quite what you say, but it's a little different in my league. But here is my construction. But if I draft three of these guys in this draft, I'm actually straying outside of those numbers. And that's okay. That is okay. The biggest factor when doing that is what's your plan? And I'm hammering this home again and again because I've talked about this tons of times on this show. Do it with a plan. You can break the optimal construction, but do it with a plan. If the plan is, all right, I'm drafting a couple receivers on a team where maybe I don't need receivers, I'm doing it with the thought of, maybe I have multiple outcomes now. Either the guys I'm drafting, I can turn around and move later, or the guys I'm drafting, I can slide in place of somebody else on my team that I can move. Same with quarterbacks. Tons of questions over the last couple days. Man, I don't really need Bo Nix, but he's there in the second of my draft. He's there at the 201. I don't like him. I don't really want to take him. I already have Derek Carr and Geno Smith along with Josh Allen. Why would I take Bo Nix? Well, it just gives you an extra option of somebody that you could move. And that's not a great construction necessarily to have in a lineup league, having those four quarterbacks. But there could be additional flexibility that you get by making that draft pick. So think about it more so, what's the flexibility? I don't want to be looking 3 years out. But if you told me I have a little bit of leeway, maybe 6 months, I mean, heck, we have 4+ months until the season starts. So you have some flexibility to move other pieces on your team before then versus the players you're just drafting. So don't look at it in a binary lens of I can't draft this player because I don't need this position. I can't draft this player because it takes me outside of my roster construction. Don't be that rigid. Otherwise, you're going to end up driving yourself crazy, especially if you're in 15, 20 leagues and you're sitting there obsessing over, man, it has to be constructed this way. The board has to fall my way in this league. Otherwise, I'm going to be screwed. And there's been a couple times where I've already gone into my leagues and gone, man, I know exactly how this draft is going to go, and I need to move. I have the 104, I have the 106, and I have the 110, and I need X, Y, and Z. And what if it doesn't fall perfectly for me? That's okay. That's okay. Be willing to stick and pick, take the best value on the board, but more importantly, be willing to accept that there is some suspense of having to be within perfect roster construction. You can stray, but have a plan. If you're at a spot where you're forced to make a pick that it's not absolutely ideal for your construction, formulate a plan around it. Give yourself multiple paths or multiple outs and factor that in when you're drafting. Maybe you want a quarterback, but you can't get one with the pick that you're at. You get sniped by a pick or two. Have a plan of how you're going to get one. Now you're forced to pick between four receivers. Think about how you want to play it. Can I turn that pick, maybe not the pick itself, into a quarterback, but can I draft myself into a player that I then can go move another player to address the need that I wanted on the clock? It doesn't have to be A or B, black or white, up or down. It always is about the flexibility and the options that you can get done with when you make these picks. So let's get into the roster construction tier. So the way I'm going to do this is, and I'm going to give a shout out. I'm going to plug this. It'll be coming out very soon. The Destination Devy Draft Guide. I will expand in that draft guide this exact topic. There will be a breakdown for every single player in the draft guide, where they fit from a roster construction standpoint, in my opinion. And there's a bunch of different classifications in there where you could say, okay, this player fits on this type of team, this type of roster construction. So I'm going to kind of go through that today, high level, you know, how to tier these players from a construction standpoint. So let's start at quarterback. So obviously at quarterbacks, you have six quarterbacks taken inside the top 12. I don't even think that's very difficult to tier this year. Now, if you want to say, I don't really want to wait for Michael Penix, I don't like Bo Nix, I'm not sure who to take between Drake May and JJ McCarthy, like those are all different debates. But from a construction standpoint, you couldn't have asked for a easier analysis. You had six first-round quarterbacks. They're all going to start at some point. Whether that's week one, week four, 2025. Now, you can play the value game a little bit differently. But it's very easy to say they're all starting quarterbacks. They're all probably going to get multiple years of opportunity. And that's it. How you want to rank them, how you want to value them relative to the other QBs in Dynasty, that's up to you. But it's very easy. Made it easy. We don't have to analyze a couple of these guys based on, well, they didn't get the draft capital, but the situation says this. Six first-round quarterbacks. Then it gets very easy. You have two quarterbacks, in my opinion, maybe four, that I can say I am going to be drafting as the any quarterbacks on a two deep. So we're talking lineup leagues only. Spencer Rattler, Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt, Devin Leary. Those are the four quarterbacks that I'll be interested in drafting as guys that could potentially win the backup job. Joe Milton, it sounds like, may move to tight end, or maybe somebody the Patriots don't exactly view as a quarterback. So I'm probably not going to be adding him or considering him to be a quarterback on a two deep because they already drafted Drake May, and they already have Jacoby Brissett there. So probably not in the mix to be a backup, and also not a guy that may stick at quarterback either. So quarterback's very easy. You have the six starters, then you have four backups. I mean, Spencer Rattler, Jordan Travis went in the fifth, and Michael Pratt went in the seventh. Devin Leary went in the sixth. All with a shot to win the backup job, none guaranteed to win the backup job. So very easy. Quarterback, super easy to navigate this year. Not really interested in any others. There were a couple guys that signed as UDFAs, but very simple to analyze the quarterbacks from roster construction standpoint this year. Tight ends. We always do tight ends pretty early as well, just because they're very easy to analyze. I mean, you have Brock Bowers went in the top 15. He's clearly a starter. Where you want to rank him, tight end 2 to 6 in Dynasty, I don't care. Up to you. Some people have said, you know what, I'm not moving him down. Others have said there's 3 or 4 guys that jumped him because he landed on the Raiders and they already have a decent tight end. So there you go. I think Ben Sinnott probably becomes a guy with a very decent shot of having a starting role, if not a starting role by the end of the year, earlier than that. I mean, the narrative being Zach Ertz was ahead of Dallas Goedert and he was ahead of Trey McBride. And both of those guys started out behind him and he was still basically the same crusty Zach Ertz that he's always been. And they ended up both emerging as starters. So I think Ben Sinnott's going to be treated that way. His draft capital said so. He was drafted 30 spots ahead of the third tight end. So I think he's the other one where you could say, even in a best ball league, I'm confident taking him. Now, are you going to be disappointed? You could be. Tight ends after a certain range, they fire from everywhere. Guys fire from the 6th round, 5th round, 4th round. So, I mean, you can't just look at him and say he's clearly above the others. But the draft capital, given how weak the class was, I think that says a lot compared to where he was versus everybody else. And Tip Riman was the next tight end off the board, and he's not a receiving tight end I'm interested in. So it was almost 50 picks between Ben Sinnott and the next receiving tight end. And then there was a huge chunk of them. I mean, we had 6 tight ends going round 4, and you can throw them all over the place. Jatavion Sanders, Carolina, Theo Johnson, New York, Eric All, Cincinnati, Cade Stover, Houston, Jared Wiley to the Chiefs, another Chiefs tight end. All of those guys, maybe JT Sanders for the ADV, meaning I could justify him in a 2 PPR or a best ball league simply for if he's the starter. People will completely forget about what made him fell in the draft and maybe what the narrative was on him prior to the draft. They'll forget about that. Ah, man, we always knew he was good. Went to a spot where he could be the starter. It is a weak tight end room in Carolina. So I think you could justify that. Theo Johnson will be another ADV pick you could probably draft in a league, given that as soon as Darren Waller officially retires, if that happens, you will now be able to go, okay, I could probably get Theo Johnson off my team for a little more than what I paid. And we'll see if that reflects in his draft price. But I think from a tier standpoint, he's somebody I'm willing to roster. And I'm talking tight end premium leagues that matter here. If we're talking a 1.5 or less, unless you tell me your tight end market would mean you could flip one of these guys for more than what you paid, I'm really not interested in paying it. Like, truthfully, I'm not interested in paying for Theo Johnson or Jatavion Sanders, even if it's the 307. Like, I have to be able to move tight ends in my league for more. And if you're telling me in your league, yeah, you have guys like Noah Fant, Mike Gesicki, can't even get a third for him, why would we draft these guys in the third? Just doesn't make sense. Will you miss on one here, there? Sure, maybe. But just not the format where I'm looking to add them at all. That's the 2 tight end rule. Don't want to carry more than 2. Best ball, obviously it's different roster construction. But we're talking very slim here. When I'm saying I'm taking these guys, it's 2 PPR leagues. Sinnott is probably the only exception. But all the others, the premium has to be enough for me to say I can fool other people into buying them. That would be where these guys would fit on any sort of construction. Otherwise, I'm leaving them on the waiver wire for somebody else to have. You can pick them up, or obviously somebody is going to draft most of them. They're just not going to be on my rosters. So let's go through the meat of it. We're talking running backs and wide receivers. I'm going to save receivers for last because there's a ton of them. Running backs. So Jonathan Brooks obviously was the only running back that went in the 2nd. Then you had Trey Benson, Blake Corum, Marshawn Lloyd, who went in the 3rd. And you had a bunch of running backs in the 4th. And then the tiers kind of fall off. You did have Audric Estime, Rasheen Ali, both of those guys going in the first half of the 5th round, 2 spots where people are interested in running backs, Denver and Baltimore. After that, you're talking about players that are going to be very, very selective based on their landing spots. So you have Kamani Vidal with the Chargers, Jawar Jordan on Houston, Dylan Lobb on the Raiders, then other guys like Tyrone Tracy. People aren't really sure about him, but got a decent landing spot. Isaiah Davis and Braylon Allen going to the same team. That's a rough one. Reminds me of when the Patriots had Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson, and then they took Pierre Strong and they took Kevin Harris back to back. Just what do I do with that? Like, you see, they obviously wanted to address the position. It probably means more for what they think about Izzy Abanikanda, to be honest. But it feels like one of those where you're drafting any running back on a 53, truthfully, after Rasheen Ali. They're all any running back on a 53. But when you start to think about, okay, I'm going to be rostering, and I'm thinking lineup leagues here, I'm going to be rostering a ton of backup quarterbacks. Which one of these guys do I truly think have some sort of movement that can happen? You can draft Jace McClellan, hoping he makes the team. Right? He could be the third running back on Atlanta. You can pick him up, and I hope he makes the roster. But is there truly going to be any sort of movement that happens between now and then? Whereas I can see movement on Juwar Jordan, potentially. Juwar Jordan ends up being a guy that could be the number two on Houston. You never know. Dylan Lobb, Kamani Vidal. Both of those guys were small school players, especially Dylan Lobb, didn't even play in G5. Both of those guys had kind of a cult following. I can see the narrative on both of those guys. So there would be reasons I would take them over players that got drafted higher than, notably Isaiah Davis, Tyrone Tracy. Heck, you could also argue I don't really even want Braylon Allen over those guys. Now, Braylon Allen has a name, but really you're getting into the any running back on a 53, but this class didn't actually deliver as many options as I thought. Outside of Vidal, Jordan, Lobb, Ali, Estime, and then all the guys that went in the fourth round or higher, that's really all the guys I want in this draft. I'm not interested in a lot of the UDFAs. Now, there's going to be a couple that pop off, you know, guys like Emmanuel Wilson from last year. We've obviously had UDFAs in the past that have popped up and been relevant, but I'm just not interested as much in going down the this guy signed in this spot as a UDFA. Just because there's a lot more options that are still out there that it doesn't feel like I need to overload myself with those. Now, if you can tell yourself a story and go through the list of the UDFAs at running backs and just say, is there a path? Is there a path where this running back signed in this spot and I think it's a depth chart where they can navigate and win a job? And if they win a job, maybe they get to a point where they're an injury away from getting some opportunity or getting some touches. But it has to be some analysis like that. Because what I don't want to do that I've made the mistake in the past, and I qualmed this a little bit in 2023, but in 2022, 2021, this is a mistake that I made. And this was notably before the backup quarterback strategy really developed. Last year was the first year where it was hardcore. I'm carrying more backups than everybody. It just happened to work out. So I've continued with that strategy into this year. But in years past, the mistakes I've made is I'm holding on to these running backs for a while. I'm probably not churning and burning them as quick as I should. And maybe there's some blind spots. And it's back to the point that I made earlier in the show. Let's say I'm in a league with 30-man rosters and I'm carrying 14 running backs, but five of them are Kendall Milton's, DeJuan Edwards. You know, I'm just holding the guys that were UDFAs that maybe I like their landing spot. But what's the plan? What's the plan? Because it fits the roster construction. Sure, any running back that could be on a 53-man roster. Heck, we're usually carrying guys that are a player away from the 53-man roster. I'll go through my own portfolio right now just to give you some example. I still am carrying shares of Keyonte Ingram and Denarik Prince. Well, they're on the Chiefs. The Chiefs didn't draft a running back, but I'm looking at those two going, at best, one of them makes the team. Chances could be neither of them make the team. And in Ingram's case, he's already been cut by other teams, but he goes to the Chiefs, so I'm suckered back in. Or in most cases, I just kept him from when he was on Arizona and then got cut, then ends up elsewhere, and I'm still just holding him the entire time. Julius Chestnut is another one. Still have a couple lingering shares of Julius Chestnut. Now, that's one I'll probably go through and trim down, but that's another guy that's been there for 2 years, was drafted by a regime with a very specific plan. They've changed regimes, so it really makes no sense to probably still be carrying him, but I still haven't cut him because I look at my construction and go, there's nobody else. All the quarterbacks are picked up. Now, that's the type of player that gets moved out as new names come in with rookies. But still, you look at up and down the list, and you're going, yeah, I'm still carrying some of these players that probably the better bet would have been, instead of holding guys like Keyonte Ingram and Denaric Prince all through last year, probably should have taken some shots on some other players, maybe a couple receivers that I could have had, that I could have claimed, that I could have maybe had a window where they were more flexible assets. And that's back to the talk about strain from your roster construction. So I'm not saying don't take shots on running backs. If you like a couple of them, fine. If you can get a couple of them like Dylan Lobb and Kamani Vidal and Rasheen Ali that people will like, that's fine. But everybody else, don't get so stuck on, well, it's any running back on a 53, and I like this guy. He could make that team. So I'm going to get him on 15 rosters. Every time I make a pick in the fourth round or fifth round or pick up a waiver claim, I'm going to prioritize the running back. Maybe there's some other players where you could squint and go, well, maybe I'll prioritize that receiver instead. That doesn't mean spend as much fab as you would, but it also means don't be so stuck that, well, that guy is out of relevant range at receiver, so I'm not even going to pick him up. When the reality is, A, there's a couple things that could take place. A, the receiver may have a quicker path to some sort of news, meaning a guy like Jacob Cowing. I haven't got to receivers, but Jacob Cowing probably is a roster clogger, but he's fast. People knew the name before the draft, and he landed on an offense that, you know, people have seen other receivers come from before. And so maybe I take a shot on him with the plan that I know he is a roster clogger. Meaning part of the plan you have to formulate is, I don't want to hold Jacob Cowing for a year to see what happens. I need to be prepared to package him in a deal, to move Jacob Cowing and a fourth for a third if I don't want him on my team anymore. So understand what you're drafting. And that is one of the reasons that people take running backs, that I would recommend taking running backs. Because if I say, you know what, it doesn't matter what you take from a construction standpoint, people will be drafting receivers and tight ends all over the place without a plan. So it's kind of a governor or a fail safe against that. Hey, draft this running back. Guess what? If he doesn't make the team, the analysis is easy. You cut him. You draft Jacob Cowing, he makes the team. He's going to make the team. Receivers have a much easier time making the team. Usually teams keep six or seven, and he was drafted in a range where he's going to make the roster. But if he's the wide receiver six, sure, he made the team. But if we're talking lineup leagues here, you've missed your window, or the window never presented itself. So now you go, well, what do I do? And what do most people do? Well, man, I took him in the fourth. He's not a bust, meaning he doesn't suck. I know he's going to be on the team. Then they don't cut him. He just sits there for another year. You get into 2025. Hey, you got Jacob Cowing on your bench. He's wide receiver 98 in Dynasty. Maybe he moves up a little bit in the offseason when two other guys leave. But for all intents and purposes, he's just a clogger. Now, he was a clogger the entire time, but you had a window where he wouldn't have been, or he had a window to be something different in the eyes of somebody else in your league. So that's the prime example of strain from your roster construction. Do it with a plan. And I think that's a very apt example of how that would look when you're comparing, do I pick up a UDFA Kendall Milton, who I liked before the draft, or Jacob Cowing, who went in the fourth round to San Francisco, and he's probably buried, but there could be a window. What is my plan? Roster construction would say Jacob Cowing, cross him off. Any running back that could make a team, Kendall Milton, pick him up. But maybe not. Just make sure you do it with a plan. So I think that's the running back position. Again, given that my numbers are going to be a little bit slimmer, maybe I prioritize a couple of these guys a little bit more. Ray Davis on Buffalo landed in a spot where he's probably still going to be undervalued. But that might be one where you go, okay, he's very similar to a lot of other running backs out there that people are valuing as seconds. So can I pick up an extra piece by moving a guy that already has a locked-in role, say like Zach Moss? You could say Zach Moss and Ray Davis are very comparable, but one is seen as a big winner of the draft because the Bengals didn't take a running back, and then Ray Davis is still going to probably go mid-third, but is there some pivot there where I can pick up an extra pick? And the extra pick could allow me to maybe take a shot on one of these guys that I can maybe move. like a Jacob Cowing, somebody like that. Just have a plan with how you're going to construct. It's a numbers game. Make sure you have the capacity to make these moves, but be flexible. And that's where the any running back on a 53 comes in, is understanding your numbers, understanding where the cutoff is, but then also understanding what else you can do within your league economy. So let's get to the receivers. I think this is the one people want to hear about the most. And I'm going to break it down like this. The draft guide is going to have classifications for every single level of receiver. And the reason that I'm doing it that way is because a lot of people play in lineup leagues. A lot of people play in shallow lineup leagues. And then we'll get other questions that are deep best ball leagues. The construction is totally different, meaning the threshold, and you'll see in the draft guide, and I'll talk about it on this show, the word threshold, when I use that, that typically means lineup worthy. They are lineup league viable. And I'm not always going to be right, but when I establish the threshold, it basically means everybody else under it is a pure ADV play that otherwise is a roster clogger. Meaning I'm taking those receivers knowing that I'm forecasting them to be roster cloggers. Now, if you still take them, it's the Jacob Cowing example. Jacob Cowing is a best ball only receiver by classification. But it doesn't mean I don't want any in lineup leagues. And again, the threshold is way deeper in a 14 team start 12 lineup league. Yeah, it's a lineup league. But you're in a format where essentially you have 168 players that are starting every week. So it's much deeper in terms of if that is a 12 by 14 league or a 14 by 12 league, and you convert that to a 12 team league, you're looking at 14 starters. That's almost half your team. So the threshold is a lot deeper. So you can justify, okay, maybe a couple of these other guys that you would classify as best ball only typically are going to be roster cloggers, are viable to draft. So understand those numbers. The draft guide is going to be based on a cookie cutter, you know, 14 team or 12 team start 10 or 14 team start 10. Probably 12 team is what I would say the base format would be for the draft guide. And if you just use the roster construction series, 12 team start 11, 30 man rosters. So again, understand your format and understand where those lines are as to how to classify them. Obviously, the top three, Neighbors, Harrison, and Dunze, I'm not even going to talk about those. How you want to rank them, how you want to tier them versus the rest of the field or against each other, that's on you. No debate on that. Then you have the next tier of what I would consider high ceiling threshold receivers. And you may go, well, you say high ceiling, but does that mean they have a high fantasy ceiling? Not necessarily. I think they can have a high fantasy ceiling, but I also think they have a high market ceiling. Meaning I have Keon Coleman as a high ceiling threshold receiver. He was the first pick of the second round. But does he have a super high ceiling? I don't know. But that doesn't mean he has a super high ceiling from a fantasy standpoint. But he's on the Bills. If he's good, the ceiling is extremely high. Ladd McConkey, same thing. People will go, well, Ladd McConkey, high ceiling. That's a hard projection. It's not his fantasy ceiling. It is he could be the number one receiver on the Chargers. That's a good spot to be. Whether you like the offense or not, it's a good spot to be Justin Herbert's number one receiver. Xavier Worthy, same thing. Same options. He's on the Chiefs. It's a crowded room, unlike Keon Coleman, unlike Ladd McConkey. It's a more crowded receiving room. But again, he's a fast Chiefs receiver. Brian Thomas Jr., exact same thing. Tied to a good quarterback. First round pick. You may have to wait a little bit, but I think there's a narrative where you could tell yourself, hey, that is a very profitable pick. And then Xavier Leggett. Do I think Xavier Leggett is likely to hit a high ceiling? No, but I could also see a world where he's a first round pick tied to a former 101 quarterback. If things flip, he probably has the ceiling that it's a little bit higher. Then you have the next tier. Now, these are still threshold receivers, but I think their ceiling from could be production, but also could be ADV value is a little bit lower. So you have A.D. Mitchell, Troy Franklin, Malachi Corley, Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, Jalen Polk, and Jermaine Burton. So seven more options where I am comfortable in lineup leagues. Again, 12 teams, start 11, 30-man rosters being kind of the baseline for this show. Those will be the seven that I would be willing to still draft. Now, all of those guys are probably going to go in the top 20 of your rookie draft. So that's not new news to see that these guys are the threshold cutoff. And then after that, it is all best ball receivers. So best ball guys that I'm interested in, and you'll see in the draft guide, I classified receivers as two different best ball only receiver classifications. The guys that I think are just best ball receivers that I think have situations where I would be fine rostering them in best ball, but then also guys that have a kick return bonus. And a couple of them are kick return only guys, but if you're in leagues with kick return yards, that is a hack. That is a hack. I will give a shout out to Koopa Troopa, who did a show this past week on the South Harmon pod. And I'm always going to call out good content when I hear it. But he talked about this. Talked about kick return yards. A lot of leagues have kick return yards. Now, it wasn't a big deal before because not a lot of guys were getting kick returns. But I actually found that a lot more of my leagues actually reward kick return yards. Like 40% of my leagues have kick return yards. And it wasn't because it was added this year. It's been there. It's been there for a couple years. I have a couple that have been in existence 5+ years that have kick return yards, but it didn't matter before. But now that they've changed the rules, I think there's some analysis if they're best ball as well, or you're starting a new best ball league. Not that I'm necessarily saying that these receivers are going to score a ton of points with kick return, but there's at least something you want to have in the back of your mind. Okay, maybe that guy's a best ball only receiver. I'll give an example. Malik Washington, best ball only receiver, but he has the kick return plus. Same with Anaya Smith. So best ball with kick returns, 100% I want those guys. But even without best ball, it's still somebody that only has to go up a tier to where they might have a little bit of an extra oomph for you to want them. So the best ball only receivers, Tez Walker, Jacob Cowing, Jalen McMillan, Javon Baker, Luke McCaffrey, Brendan Rice, Jamari Thrash. So those are the seven that I had as the best ball only receivers. And then the kick return plus guys, Malik Washington, Bub Means, Jaquan Jackson, Anaya Smith, Ryan Flournoy. Those were the five. A guy like Ryan Flournoy, I saw getting hyped up a little bit that he's in a good landing spot. I don't disagree with that. But again, he was a late sixth round pick, so not banking on anything there. Early seventh round pick, Brendan Rice. Same thing. I have him as a best ball only receiver, but he's Brendan Rice. People knew his name. He fell to the seventh, landed on the Chargers. So again, as you're going through this, there's narratives on all of these where you could tell yourself, man, I really shouldn't draft this player or that player. But these classifications kind of help you spell out what the narrative could be. And I'll lay it out more kind of on future content. I'll probably do a draft guide, maybe draft guide recap, or we'll do some stuff in the Discord about the draft guide for sure, kind of explaining some of this data, because Ray contributed a ton to it. Jordan Backus contributed a ton to it. And then Shane Manila as well. Like, everybody will be able to kind of explain what's in the guide going forward. This was the part that I put out, specifically the roster construction tiers. So you'll get every prospect in the guide and how they fit within roster construction. What is their classification? Also, check out destinationdevy.com later this week where the guide will be available. But that's part of what I put in there is just the roster construction tiers with all these players. So I think it's interesting kind of going through this. People are going to have differing opinions. If I didn't mention a player, then I classify him as a penny stock slash roster clogger. And there's plenty of them. A couple quarterbacks on there that I thought might get drafted. A bunch of running backs that I didn't mention for a reason. I mentioned Kendall Milton. I mentioned Dewan Edwards, but many, many, many others. Cody Schrader, Dylan Johnson, Frank Gore Jr., Amani Bailey, Michael Wiley. There's tons of them. Tons of guys that you were going. Blake Watson is another one. Tons of players where you're going, yeah, let's see where they land. But they're probably the ones where you want to be very selective as to how much you spend. Because that's where my strategy has changed from years past. Years past, I would roster all of those guys. Pick them all up. The hopes that there's one gem out of 20. And then how many did I end up holding, like Julius Chestnut, for 2 years, 3 years? And Chestnut was drafted, but it's still one of those guys where it wasn't that I picked him up and held him. It was I did it for 2+ years. That's where the opportunity cost gets lost. So think about it. And I'll end it like this. Roster construction doesn't have to be binary. Do not be locked into, I know what my perfect construction is. I do not want to stray. Be wary of that. Think about what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be kicking off a ton of rookie drafts. I've already had some start yesterday, but a ton are going to be this week. And there's always a time crunch of what do I do on the clock? Do I just make the pick? Do I trade back? Do I trade out? Do I try to trade up? Like, it's tough to manage as many leagues as I'm in. However, the thing that I can manage is I can think through every range of outcome before I pick a player. Not whether I trade out, not whether I trade up, not whether I trade back. All of those are different analysis. I have to go probably put in some work to make those deals. But what I can do, what I can control for 5 minutes when I'm on the clock is think of the range of outcomes on the player I'm drafting. And when I say range of outcomes, I don't mean their fantasy points. That goes into it. What I mostly mean is search them on X. Search them on Reddit. Search them on Google. Go to some bigger groups on Facebook. What are people saying about these players? What is the sentiment? What is the vibe? Type in a random player that got drafted in the fifth round and just read the top 10 comments on that player. And there's not going to be much on some guys. But if you have a Twitter that has a bunch of people in the fantasy industry, dynasty industry, gambling industry that are following stuff like we are. And the first six of the first 10 takes on Ryan Flournoy are he's the future's number two receiver in Dallas. Put that in the back of your mind. Then there's going to be other players you search. And the last thing that was said on him was a team thinking about how he fits into their NFL offense. Okay, maybe there's not much of a dynasty take there. But do that before you pick the player. Have an idea of what does the group or the community think about the player. You can control that before you make the pick. And then make the pick with as much information as you have. There's going to be ones where we're completely wrong or we read it wrong and it doesn't work out. But at least go through that analysis before you make the pick. So that concludes today's episode, Roster Construction Tiers with the Rookies. There's going to be a ton of rookie content coming out over the next few weeks, a ton of drafts, more analysis from the DD team, AMAs in the Discord. If you haven't joined the Discord, this is the time. If you have rookie drafts that you want help with, this is the time. Patreon.com/allgas. Join at destinationdevy.com. Get access to the Destination 5 tier, which is everything. If you join the Destination 5 tier, you get everything. All the tools, everything on the website, all access to everything on the Discord. When merch gets given away, you get entered into that. It's all encompassing if you join the Destination 5 tier. If you join through Patreon, you can have access to either the Destination 5 tier on there or the DTI 5 tier on there or the Heisman tier. They're slightly different. So let me know if you have any questions, but this is the time to jump in if you haven't taken the chance. And as Ray always says, if you're disappointed with what you purchased or if you're disappointed in the group or the community, money back. Try it out for a month. And if you're saying this is not a place I want to be, walk away. Money back, not in the business to take anybody's money. Once you jump into this community, you will not want to leave. So destinationdevy.com or patreon.com/allgas. Let's fire up for rookie drafts. Be smart, be comfortable being a little uncomfortable before the end of the season or before the start of the 2024 season, because I even need to do that. Right here on this mic, I am saying I need to be more uncomfortable with some of the decisions that I make, because I can be so rigid going, that doesn't fit my construction. I'm just going to put a blind eye to it. It doesn't exist, and it's burned me in the past. So I implore everybody to take that advice, go crush your rookie drafts, be active, and grind to start the 2024, really lead up to the 2024 season. So with that, I will go ahead and sign off for the week. Be chill.
You know I loved you when I told you in the summer. Almost packed your bags and moved to Minnesota. I was the thunder, you were the lightning. I saw the future, you caught it timing. You knew it ended before it was over. And I never got closure, closure. I never got